This is Jim Inkster. Coming today, the Metro Council in East Baton Rouge Parish is slated to vote on the Fairness Ordinance, which has been debated now for months, sponsored by Councilwoman C. Denise Marcel, a recent guest on this program. We'll talk about it and much more. Among our guests, Kathleen Benfield of the American Family Association, who is based in the New Orleans area, came all the way to Baton Rouge a few weeks ago to voice her opposition. Also on the show, we are slated to hear from Maxine Crump, one of the first African-American students to live in a dorm at Louisiana State University, a person who's battled prejudice and has had a spectacular career in journalism through the years and is now intricately involved with the Blues Foundation in this community. Now the news on 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. Outside the area, it's 877-217-5757. You may reach us by email, inkstershow@wrkf.org, and you may tweet us at Jim Inkster Show. Today, the Metro Council will converge, and the council will presumably vote on the Fairness Ordinance, which would prohibit discrimination in housing and employment to people of different races, creeds, colors, and sexual orientations. And it has been a major point of contention for members of the religious community who are ardently against it. Tony Perkins of the Family Research Council has called it the Homosexual Affirmation Ordinance. Those on the other side, including many members of the business community who showed up at the council meeting a few weeks ago to voice their support. But John Delgado, council member, knowing the votes were not there, he purposely filibustered, allowing a few weeks to pass. And so today we have a meeting, and that meeting will likely start with a vote on this measure, which has been controversial in this community. And we'll talk about it a bit later with Kathleen Benfield of the American Family Association. Today, the Reverend Gene Mills, president of the Louisiana Family Forum, weighed in the pages of the Baton Rouge Advocate, saying, "I do not believe that Dale Brown, the Albemarle Corporation, Lamar Advertising, BRAC, the Baton Rouge Area Foundation, or the ministers who spoke in favor of this ordinance speak for anybody other than themselves. They should separate themselves from co-author Councilman John Delgado's offensive statement alleging that opponents of the ordinance are attempting to implement the Christian equivalent of Sharia law. Intolerance and the pursuit of tolerance is simply hypocrisy to the activists who insist on introducing sexual politics into East Baton Rouge life. We kindly admonish the council to say no, thank you." Those words from the Reverend Gene Mills, president of the Louisiana Family Forum, an organization which packs a punch in this state, both at the state legislature and at the Metro Council. The state legislature, by the way, overwhelmingly refused to take an unconstitutional sodomy law off the books, and the vote was overwhelming in East Baton Rouge Parish among lawmakers representing this area, including the likes of Steve Carter, who voted with the Reverend Gene Mills, who no doubt was doing what he does well. He was lobbying lawmakers to vote the way the Family Forum wishes them to do. Tomorrow on this show, I'm sure we'll have a post-mortem, and we will review what happened. But at this point, it appears that another vote against it is likely to happen. At the last meeting, when John Delgado filibustered, it was thought that there were only two or three council people who would have voted for it, and it takes seven votes to make this a reality. 297-5633, if you'd like to weigh in. We are waiting on the late-arriving Maxine Crump to be with us, but I'm told she is en route, and of course she's a fascinating lady who's been part of this community for many years as a journalist and somewhat of an activist, and broke the color barrier at the LSU dormitories 50 years ago when she became, I think, the first African-American woman to reside in a dorm on the LSU campus. And now, as we look, the student body is over 10% African American, albeit in a state that has one-third of its residents who are African American, but still noted improvement since 1964. The football team at LSU this year will be about 80% African American, and that is from an entity that 43 years ago had no blacks. So there has been movement positively in this community regarding integration, and today many believe that this vote will be symbolic as to whether we as a community embrace people of all sexual orientations, no matter what their gender identity. How important is this vote? Does this really mean a whole lot? Some people say symbolically it means a great deal, and perhaps beyond symbolism. If you're fired from your job or if you're kicked out of your house, is it acceptable if it's done on the basis of sexual orientation? We will talk more with Kathleen Benfield about this, and now we have Maxine Crump joining us. Good morning to you, Maxine.
Good morning, Jim.
Well, we were warming up for your appearance by previewing today's council vote with the Metro Council weighing in on this fairness ordinance. As a journalist, how do you think the issue has been covered? Has it been covered effectively?
Yeah, I think the coverage has been effective, yes.
And why so?
Well, because I think that the media has just given the information and the facts. I don't see any distortion of the information that's coming from the media.
Some would think that it's not been covered enough, and then others would probably argue that it's been covered too much, that the media may have fanned the flames. Any thoughts along those lines?
Not in this case. I don't see where the media's fanned the flame. I think the media's been rather cautious in not doing that.
Why is this such a contentious issue in this community where you have resided now for most of your life?
Because of the statement that you said that somebody made about this being an affirmation of homosexuality. Just a thought that somebody intelligent or educated at all think that we have to affirm homosexuality. People are already here, and everyone is of their own orientation already. We don't affirm or not affirm who people really already are.
Well, I think that if you were to poll a majority of our listeners, and based on the poll that BRAC released a few weeks ago, the majority of the community would agree with you, but not the majority of the Metro Council and not a majority of the state legislature. So why are lawmakers seemingly out of tune with the people at large?
I would like to understand that myself as to what happens when people lock in on a belief without really having a basis for it that I can understand, or thinking that their constituency, who's shown their strong support for this ordinance, might not know what they're asking for. Usually, you hear most elected officials say, we trust our constituency to know what it is they want. We believe that they're intelligent. And when they speak, that's how we vote. Well, it looks like this would be a time that's being ignored, because the majority of people in Baton Rouge say they're for this ordinance.
Reverend Maxine Crump, although I don't know, maybe you moonlight. Reverend Pitcher on this show a few weeks ago, he voiced his opposition. Then he got to the council meeting. He had a change of heart. He had an epiphany. And is it possible that there might be a surprise today, that maybe a few council people will have a different point of view after deliberating for a few more hours?
I don't think they'll have a different point of view, but I hope they'll hear their constituency and decide based on what people say they want. They can keep their point of view. Just vote rightly. Do the right thing.
Okay. Well, I think we know where you stand.
And
you,
that's where I stand. Well, I think the fairness ordinance needs to pass.
You face discrimination from a racial perspective, and perhaps being a woman, you have encountered discrimination at times in your life. Is this different, or is it basically the same kind of thing?
It's the same kind of thing.
Just in a different packaging.
I would say that's so.
Prejudice is prejudice, no matter what.
Well, when it's discrimination and it's institutional, it's racism or whatever that particular group that they're discriminating against is that ism. So it's when it's institutional, it has a power that's beyond what an individual can have reciprocal power to counter.
The Metro Council has 5 African Americans out of the 12 members, and at this point, the only one publicly in favor of this is Denise Marcel. Is there any surprise along those lines?
I would say no.
Why?
I think there's I think it's connected to a strong religious base. And a belief that somehow homosexuality is wrong. And this isn't a vote about homosexuality. This is a vote about what's right for all citizens, that everyone should have the right to have full access to all institutions equitably without any barriers based on something about them, their sexual orientation, their religion, their color, their age. Those are not supposed to be barriers in America.
I was commenting that if John Stewart had received a copy of the last Metro Council meeting, he would have a field day.
I think he would.
Baton Rouge would look like the laughingstock of America. What does it say about the city that we're debating this not only based on how the vote may go, but in such base terms? This, in many ways, has not been an intellectual discussion.
That's very true. It has not been an intellectual discussion. I think people in Baton Rouge seem to be responding, the public voice seemed to be responding as almost like saying, we want our city back in a lot of ways. And yet we're growing in size and we're doing a lot of great things. And we celebrate the fact that we have a black mayor, and we celebrate a lot of good things about Baton Rouge. Part of that celebration needs to come with our cultural history of being friendly, warm, Southerners who treat everybody wonderfully and like everybody, and we're open and welcoming. We need to look like that if we're going to say we're that.
All right. Charles on North Foster. Good morning, Charles. You're on the air with Maxine Crump.
Good morning, Maxine. Good morning, Jim. Let me say that when I hear the Metro Council or the lack of discussion, a lot of the arguments they use that if I vote for this, I would be supporting homosexuality was that same logic was used to say if you support integration, you support miscegenation, that you are promoting the end of the white race. That argument was used. Or it's like a pastor accusing God of promoting sin by giving us the freedom to choose. I would like to believe that the council is open-minded, but my councilman, Ronnie Edwards, I personally know she answers to a group of pastors who have the community and political stronghold, and she better wake up, because in 70805, we need a fair and open marketplace, and I'm counting on her to vote that way.
Thank you, Charles. Maxine?
Well, Charles' sentiment is just that, you know, what people want is what the council representatives need to vote for, because we're not elected to be heads of our religion or to represent our religion. We represent our constituency.
297-5633 is your number, 877-217-5757. We will talk with Maxine Crump about a few other items. For many years, she was an ace reporter in this community, and that was back in the day when these issues were permeating, and they still are all these years later. Will we ever live to see a different day when the same cycle doesn't take place as far as discrimination and prejudice and racism being issues that dominate our culture?
We certainly can. We absolutely can. Once people understand what these barriers are and realize we can move them, we can, just like we can build a new highway. We absolutely can.
We shall return after this time out and return to the phone lines, and we'll hear some information about the Blues Foundation as
yes,
well.
Yes, indeed.
That's a happier note, and Maxine Crump is with us for a bit longer. Back after this 90-second pause. This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge, 297-5633. Maxine Crump, veteran journalist, sometime activist, and all-around mover and shaker, is with us. Barry in Mid-City. Good morning, Barry. You're on the air.
Good morning. Wonderful program, and want to thank Maxine for coming on and reflect on the way that Maxine and others, and myself included, have worked hard to overcome prejudice, especially racial prejudice. And this process that we're in right now, I think, according to the meeting 3 weeks ago of the City Council, shows the preponderance of Baton Rouge wanting us to move forward. And I just want to thank you, Maxine, for coming on and for being so strongly and supportive. And yes, City Council members are there to vote on these issues and represent their constituents. And I say this as a member of the clergy. They're not there to represent particular clergy opinions.
Thank you, Rabbi Barry Weinstein. That's the old axiom. Some lawmakers say some issues are so big that they're going to vote from their gut and their heart rather than what their constituents may or may not want. And I'm sure some of these people who will vote against this today believe that the majority of their constituents don't want it to happen. That there is a distinct minority, at the very least, in this community that is applauding Reverend Mills and others and believe that this should not be part of Baton Rouge.
Yeah.
So how do you acknowledge the extremely vocal minority view on this, if at all?
Maybe we're giving too much attention to the minority vocal noise.
Maybe so. But there was a time, of course, in this community when a majority of the people were in favor of segregation. And that was wrong.
But it was the law. Segregation was the law.
Right. So the people who were brave enough to speak out against it were speaking not only from a minority viewpoint at that time, but also they were talking about breaking the law or changing the law. And I think that may be part of the reason why some people believe, look, the civil rights struggle was hard, and this one is hard too, but there are those who believe it's not nearly as hard as the struggle for equality for people of color.
Well, I know for sure that the civil rights fight was to say the law that divided people in groups in this country and named them a different race and ranked them was wrong. And till yet, no one has actually disputed that legally, sociologically, scientifically. In no way have we disputed the fact that it doesn't make sense, it doesn't fit the Constitution in America, to divide people in color groups and rank them and decide where they can and cannot go and put up institutional structures and foundational barriers to limit their access. That was wrong, and no one can dispute that. A lot of people can say they prefer it differently, or we don't really need to make these changes because the 10 years of the civil rights work rolled back 300 years of developing this structural foundation in American institutions. 10 years did not get rid of racial barriers. What those 10 years did was come up with a Civil Rights Act to say you can sue if you can prove it. It didn't say all institutions have to assess themselves, survey to find out which barriers, which color barriers are still in place, and remove them if they're there. There was never that mandate.
Well, when you enrolled at LSU, fall of 64. A big anniversary.
Yes, this is my anniversary.
This month. You remember the date?
I know it was September, but I don't remember the date.
Okay, so actually next month, but less than a month away from your anniversary of 5 decades enrolling as, what, the only African-American in a dorm at that time, right?
That's right.
How was that experience?
Well, I remember I was 18. Mm-hmm. It's hard to remember that I was 18,
barely.
But I remember it very well. I was 18.
Just turned 18.
And It was at the height of the civil rights movement, after the March on Washington and the summer of the Civil Rights Act, and then the law that desegregated LSU passed and all that. And my father was a civil rights activist. Emmanuel Crump led a lot of the voting rights activity in Iberville Parish, along with some other highly charged and learned men in that area and women who fought to make sure that now that there was a Voting Rights Act, that these people would vote. Anyway, as a result of all of that and everything we were seeing on TV, I wanted to be a part of it, hearing all about Freedom Summer and everything, and it was my opportunity. So when asked, did I want to go to LSU, the answer was yes. We have that opportunity. Well, I'm going.
But I don't imagine it was an easy process.
I actually felt like I was just another college student going to college for a minute, but I was also aware that it could be protest and backlash. But it turns out,
on the whole, it was...
it was benign.
Sylvester on I-12. Good morning, Sylvester. You're on with Maxine. Turn your radio down, please.
Sylvester.
All right. We'll get Sylvester squared away, hopefully, and go to HB in Denham Springs. HB, you're on the air. Good morning to you.
Good morning, sir. Ms. Crump, I just got a quick question here. Mr. Loop has commented that he has 30-plus items on the council agenda for tonight. Last week, I think it was, at the last council meeting, Mr. Delgado basically performed a filibuster due to this same topic we're talking about. The question I have is, why do we need to put so much emphasis on this when it's already, to the best of my knowledge, federal law anyway that we abide by that?
All right. Why do we need the law? Why isn't federal law sufficient, asks HB in Denham Springs.
Federal law has not been sufficient to end racial barriers, and that's been in place for a long time, and it still hasn't ended color barriers. And I think if so many people who are homosexual feel oppressed, then we have to do something. And this fairness ordinance is just a way of saying, if you can prove... the same thing with the civil rights. If you can prove that you've been discriminated against, then you at least have a recourse.
297-5633 is your number outside the area. 877-217-5757. Inkster Show at WRKF.org. Sylvester on I-12. Hi, Sylvester.
Hi, Jim. How are you doing today?
Fine.
Good. I'm a first-time caller, and normally I just listen to your program, but I had something I must voice. I moved to Baton Rouge after Katrina. I used to think that every time I passed up those three crosses that this was heaven. I mean, I found a nice place. I enjoyed everything about it. But then I noticed that a lot of people here in Baton Rouge hide behind religion as a way of judging people. You know, and it's regretful. I hear what the person is talking about today, and I can agree with 100%, but in my small business, when I deal with people, I notice that those people in Baton Rouge have a way of saying yes to one thing and expressing something altogether different when they're around their friends. I hope things pass, but I doubt it seriously. I doubt it seriously if the council will be able to pass this. And I wish him luck. I would like to see Baton Rouge grow. I would like to see Baton Rouge prosper. But as long as they have that opinion on how to treat people, it's regretful.
Thank you, Sylvester. Hope you'll call again. John in Livingston. John, good morning. You're on WRKF.
Good morning. I don't know if the council still does this, but at one time they made several trips to Austin, Texas, trying to make Baton Rouge into the next Austin. And I always was a little puzzled about that, and today I'm even more puzzled that, you know, they want to make Baton Rouge into Austin, but yet keep the same mindset of the people in Baton Rouge that we've had for the last 50 years. It's a waste of time and a waste of taxpayer money for these guys to go to Austin on a fact-finding mission when we can't change the mentality. I think your last caller summed up a lot. And You know, those crosses are fine, but at the end of the day, they're just structural steel, just like a light pole or anything else. Unless there's something, some meaning behind them, they're just another structural steel element.
Do you think you're sharing the majority viewpoint calling from Livingston Parish, John?
I'm probably the only person from Livingston Parish that has this viewpoint.
Well, how are things for you in Livingston Parish?
Very isolated.
Well, East Baton Rouge Parish is considered by some to be a liberal bastion with two distinct universities, major universities in the city, the only city in America with two land-grant universities situated in the same place, a few miles apart. And it's a city that in 2011, Bobby Jindal in his hometown only got 50% of the votes here. He got 66% statewide. So the populace indicates Obama carried this city, by the way. President Obama did. Only got 41% in the state. The indicators are that Baton Rouge is less conservative than the rest of Louisiana, but places like Shreveport, they've passed an ordinance of this kind. And I think did so without a whole lot of fanfare, Maxine. Baton Rouge, for whatever reason, is a tough sell on this. And the Metro Council, these people earn, I think, $300 a month and have a $900 expense account. They don't make a lot of money. They all have to have other jobs. They're certainly subject to the public and the reaction of the people of this city when they go to work every day. But for whatever reason, a majority of them, to this point, at this time, they have dug in their heels on this.
Yeah, and that's how we see it, but I don't think that's how they see it. I think those who have the grasp of what they believe is the hand of the divine, that is their message, that they believe that there is something right about their stand as ordained by God, is what they're holding on to. And it's hard to really be critical of the individual who feels that way, and I'm not. I'm also not believing that the cross is or hypocritical to those who have it up. I think that they strongly think they're right, and that's what we're up against, not people who really don't care and people who are hypocrites or negative. They just believe they're right. And those of us who believe in the separation of church and state are the ones who need to get it real clear that this is a government issue. This is of the people, for the people, by the people, constitutionally and law abiding. It's not a church issue.
297-5633, and Mark Upton writes, research on other southern cities that have passed similar legislation like Shreveport and New Orleans shows that there will not be a specter of a storm of lawsuits against Baton Rouge businesses if the ordinance is passed. It's shameful they resort to outright lies, writes Mark, to scare people from supporting equality. Now, Gene Mills, who I don't think he's a liar. I think he's sincere in what he says, like him or not, but he believes that this could precipitate lawsuits and perhaps more than a few. Is that a valid
concern? No, there's no evidence. Notice no evidence was given. No evidence of any law on the books that all of a sudden wakes up a whole bunch of lawsuits. If race didn't do it, nothing will.
Okay, and by the way, Kip Holden in his first week as mayor, and this goes back to, what, January of 2005, he by the power that he has as mayor, imposed this same kind of rule, ordinance, for city parish workers. And I don't know of any lawsuits, any, in the last 9.5 years.
Now, there is evidence. Evidence that there are no lawsuits by one that's been for city parish workers, which is a large number of people. Mm-hmm. So, no lawsuits.
Nathan downtown. Nathan, good morning. You're on the air with Maxine Crump.
Well, first of all, then, if there are not going to be any lawsuits, then why not just pass a simple resolution? And second of all, we should follow who's pushing this, because it does have to do with lawsuits. John Delgado stands to make a lot of money off of this with his family. And his wife and his brother-in-law.
He's an attorney. It might be a valid question to ask him if he would refrain from representing clients in this kind of litigation. But
I think he'd be willing to do that. But I think he believes in it.
I gave Gene Mills the benefit of the doubt a few minutes ago. I'll give John Delgado the benefit of the doubt here. I think he, like Gene Mills, is doing this because he believes that he's on the right side of the angels. And that's what this show is about. Who is right?
Maxine, what is right? The show is not about who is right. It's about what is right.
Ultimately, it is. But it comes down to how people vote. And today, there could be a surprise, but I would be surprised if we are surprised. So we shall see. It quite likely will be a case in which only two or three people vote for it. I think last time Chandler Loop was going to vote for it, and Denise Marcel and John Delgado. And those were the only known yes votes at that time. AJ on airline. AJ, good morning. You're on with Maxine.
Good morning. Does this also cover a religious belief by there's a certain religion that's primarily out of Utah where you can have more than one wife? Does this change the whole dynamic legally that if somebody comes up with seven wives, everything has to be on the same level?
All right. Well, this fairness ordinance protects somebody who has seven wives. Maxine?
Oh, you know what the fairness ordinance is, Jim. It's for the workplace, public accommodation and housing.
Okay. Well, we'll talk more about this, I'm sure, tomorrow and the days to come. But before you leave us and before we're joined by Kathleen Benfield, I wanted you to talk about your actions with the Blues Foundation and a big gala coming tomorrow.
Yes, it is. The 2014 Blues Gala by the Baton Rouge Blues Foundation will be honoring blues legend Robert Pete Williams, and it's going to be on all Baton Rouge lineup of honorees. Robert Pete Williams, Otis Lightning Slim Hicks, Jimmy Dotson, and Lazy Lester. A lot of people in Baton Rouge listening probably don't know these people. That's why we're honoring them. But there are a lot of people who do, and we want everyone to come out and celebrate the roots of American popular music, and the roots of American popular music is right here in Baton Rouge. And these are some of the guys. In addition to honoring, we celebrate Robert Pete Williams and Lightnin' Hopkins for their 100th birthday year. Jimmy Dotson and Lazy Lester are living, so we celebrate them as living legends.
All right, and this will be where?
It's going to be at the Capitol Park Museum. And we're going to open with Henry Gray on piano. And we're also going to do a video presentation memorializing the legendary Ernest Tabby Thomas. And afterward, Chris Thomas King, his Tabby's son, is going to play.
That's wonderful. Tomorrow night, what time?
6:30. And you need to be there at 6:30 because we kick off right at 6:30.
All right. Well, thank you, Maxine Crump. And we shall return after this 90-second pause. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number outside the area. 877-217-5757. Inkster Show at WRKF.org. And you may tweet us at Jim Inkster Show. Frank Barnett is producing. Today, the lead editorial letter to the editor in The Advocate is from the Reverend Gene Mills, president of the Louisiana Family Forum. He's in Baton Rouge. He says a so-called fairness ordinance was reintroduced to the East Baton Rouge Parish Metro Council on July 23rd as a slight modification to a previous effort cleverly titled One Baton Rouge. This ordinance, unlike its predecessor, boldly goes into every private civil conversation and contract. It's aimed at providing special protections for sexual orientation and gender identity, not based on biological gender at birth, but internal sense of gender. It should be more accurately be called the Homosexual Affirmation Ordinance. This ordinance should be opposed by anyone who believes in freedom of speech, freedom of association, freedom of religion, and a free market economy. Kathleen Benfield is with us, who's based in the greater New Orleans area, who came all this way a few weeks ago to testify against this ordinance. And good morning to you, Kathleen Benfield, head of the American Family Association in our state. Hi, Kathleen.
Good morning, Jim. It's great to be back on your show.
It's nice to hear your voice. So what propelled you or compelled you to come all the way from New Orleans and make that tough ride and rush hour to the Metro Council chamber to voice your opposition to this measure a few weeks ago?
Well, I am opposed, as you know, Jim. I am opposed to this ordinance for a number of reasons. I have spoken against this in other venues as well, including at the legislature. And the interesting thing about this is that the proponents of this ordinance are asking the Baton Rouge Metro Council to do something which the Louisiana legislature has refused to do, the United States Congress has refused to do, the United States Supreme Court and district courts have refused to do, President Obama has refused to do. So this is, it's not like I'm standing alone and or others are standing alone against this ordinance. This is something that is very much acceptable, my position, around the country, because others have refused to do exactly what these proponents are asking the Baton Rouge Metro Council to do.
Rick Causey writes in an email, Kathleen, even though I was raised in the Christian church, this type of ignorance and hate is why I stay out of churches now. Jesus was about love and peace and acceptance, a liberal and a radical in his day. Your response?
Well, my response is that those who cry for tolerance are the least tolerant. Referring to my position and the position of many other citizens of Baton Rouge as ignorance and hate is extremely intolerant. And you would never hear language like that coming out of the opponents of this ordinance. So that just demonstrates the problem we have here. We have people screaming for tolerance, yet themselves being the most intolerant.
Well, Henry Johnson writes, does Reverend Mills, Miss Benfield, do they desire a theocracy for Baton Rouge?
Well, does President Obama, the United States Congress, the United States Legislature, and the Supreme Court of the United States demand a theocracy? I don't think so. The reasons why classes are protected, by, for example, by the Civil Rights Act of 1964, the reasons are rational and fact-based. And the problem here is that the classes that are seeking protection do not meet the legal or rational basis for creating a protected class. And so that is the reason why we're opposing it. It has nothing to do with the claims of that email writer.
All right. Another email says, do I recall correctly that Southerners used the Bible at one time to justify slavery? Is that this discussion?
No, there are people that have very rational reasons why they believe that business people and property owners should have control over their property and business. And so whatever their reasons are for desiring to control their businesses and to make decisions about their businesses, that is up to them. But what we're seeing here, and the reason why we consider this an unfairness ordinance, is because this ordinance picks winners and losers. It takes one set of values and beliefs and says that that set deserves higher protection and more ability to determine certain things and the way certain things should be in business, and hits that against another group of citizens. So really, you know, people talk about one Baton Rouge and bringing people together. This ordinance is extremely divisive in that it pits one group of people in the Baton Rouge area against another group of people, and in my opinion, is extremely divisive.
Do you think you have the votes?
I think we do. I think that we do. Of course, I think we do, and I'm sure if you ask the other side, they would say the same thing. But we're believing that the Baton Rouge Metro Council is, number one, tired of this discussion. This is, what, about the fourth or fifth iteration of this one Baton Rouge, one let's all get along type of ordinance. And repeatedly, just like the legislature, just like the United States Congress, this effort has been rebuffed. And what I'm hoping is that the Baton Rouge Council can move along and move on to issues that affect the quality of life for all Baton Rouge citizens and, you know, just move along and try to focus on other things. That's what I'm hoping.
Bob at LSU. Bob, you're on the air with Kathleen Benfield.
Yes, I'm wondering if your guest is aware she just made the, well, almost verbatim, the exact same argument used to defend laws to keep black people from renting or buying property. I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
Yeah, and the relevance of that statement is? What is the relevance of that statement, Jim?
Well, people made statements like that, and now it's been shown that they were on the wrong side of history. Do you think you're on the wrong side of history?
I absolutely do not. In fact, that's a totally irrelevant statement. Number one, there is no equivalence between the struggle that black people in this country face, not being able to go to the same water fountain as white people, not being able to sit at the same lunch counter as white people, not being able to sit in the same seats on the bus as white people. That is totally and completely different than what is we're talking about here and the class of people we're talking about here. We're talking about a group of people that have a very high standard of living and disposable income. They are politically powerful, as exemplified by the attention that President Obama and other politicians have given to this issue.
All right, we're going to take a few more calls, be very brief if possible with Kathleen, and obviously a lot of people want to weigh in on this. Dan downtown. Dan, you're on the air with Ms. Benfield. Hi, Dan.
Yes, Ms. Benfield, why do you want to treat gay people differently from straight people?
I want to treat them exactly the same. I want to treat them exactly the same, and I do. I do. What I do not want to do and what I do not think is fair is to force individuals and businesses to relinquish control of business decisions and decisions about their property. So, no, I do not want to treat them different, and I never have, and I never intend to.
Jim on I-10. Jim, you're on with Kathleen. Hi, Jim.
Hey, James. How you doing? I wanted to comment that Kathleen, referring to the Supreme Court, United States Congress, and state legislature, is referring to the wrong group of bigots. They all remind me of what we had in the South many years ago. And
all right. Daryl on College. Thank you, Jim. You'll be our final caller for Kathleen. Daryl on College, good morning to you.
Yes. One thing I will say is I do not equate the struggle of black people for equality in America with the struggle of homosexuals. I'm a black person. And I don't believe those things are related in any way. So on that point, I agree with you, with your guest.
All right. Thank you, Daryl. Kathleen, your final thoughts. Do you have the votes today?
I pray that we do. I hope that calmer and cooler heads will prevail. And I'm grateful for the opportunity to speak with you and your listeners, Jim. Thank you so much.
Thank you for joining us today, Kathleen Benfield. And I'm sure she'll be at the Metro Council hearing this afternoon if you'd like to say hello to Ms. Benfield. We're joined now by the remarkable actress, Janine Turner. She is best known for her role on the series Northern Exposure as Maggie O'Connell and then as Dr. Dana Stowe on Lifetime Strong Medicine. Good morning to you, Janine.
Good morning. How are you?
Doing well. It's nice to hear your distinctive voice. And this is a time that is a sad one. Not only did we lose Lauren Bacall this week, and she, of course, lived a natural life and died at 89, but Robin Williams, he left us at 63 by his own hand. How does something like this happen to somebody who seemingly has it all?
Very sad. I was just shocked and stunned when I heard. I mean, what a brilliant talent and a kind man he was. And you know, I've written my book that's coming out a little bit vulnerable where I talk about my sobriety, and I got sober when I was 23, and I now have 28 years of sobriety. And you know, we don't know the details of every, you know, more will be revealed, I suppose, with Robin Williams, but they did say he had been in and out of rehab and struggling with alcohol. And, you know, alcohol is a depressant, and it can lead to a lot of tragedies such as these. People can't think straight anymore, and it confuses the thinking. People see darkness instead of light, and so it's just, I think probably, I know for a fact that this disease permeates, you know, all across the country, and everyone who's listening, I'm sure, knows a mother or sister, or brother, or wife, uncle, crazy aunt, you know, somebody who has a problem with this disease. So it doesn't have any social, so it crosses all social barriers and all ethnic barriers, and it just affects us all across the country.
We're visiting with actress Janine Turner. Her book, A Little Bit Vulnerable, is about addiction, in which she has fought and conquered. And the story in the New York Times, as you can imagine, front page today about the death of Robin Williams, saying, given his well-publicized troubles with depression, addiction, alcoholism, and a significant heart surgery in 2009, Mr. Williams should have had a resume filled with mysterious gaps. Instead, he worked nonstop. He always showed up despite his obvious issues. He was heroic in that regard. Why at 63 does a man like this finally succumb to the torment within him?
Well, you know, a very good question, and I think that we would only be able to speculate, but because I'm very familiar with the disease, I think that the disease wants to conquer. I mean, I've taught my daughter never to pick up. The statistics are, if both parents are alcoholics, your child has 100% chance of becoming an alcoholic, and if one is, your child has a 50% chance. And the disease wants to conquer people, and I think that it did. It got the upper hand with Robin Williams, and that's the problem with, you know, not only alcohol today. When I got sober, it was purely just alcohol. You got sober. Well, people had drugs too, but you got sober. Now we have all these prescription drugs, and I think that's really messing people up. Doctors that aren't psychiatrists are passing them out. And I don't know if that had anything to do with Robin Williams or not, but it's just making it messier. And I think that it's interesting to watch people who are in and out of recovery. Sometimes the light goes off and they get it, and sometimes life just gets to be too hard. And alcoholics in general are very sensitive people. You know, we don't have the DNA is different, the genetic code, we're more sensitive. We don't have enough endorphins, and it's just unfortunate. I think that it got him, which is unfortunate.
Well, Robin Williams, by his own admission, used cocaine for many years. He was the last man to see John Belushi alive in March of 1982. Mm-hmm. Some would say it's somewhat remarkable that he lasted as long as he did, considering how many years he was living on the edge.
Well, and that happens. I mean, you never know with people what age or how long they can go. Some people can go free, and some people can be under the influence, like you said, and they can still show up to work, and they go, oh, see, I don't have a problem. But, you know, it can disrupt family life, and it can disrupt in other areas that aren't so black and white. And I just believe that Robin Williams is in a better place. And he doesn't have his demons anymore. And I lost my father in January, and I talk about that in my book as well, walking through grief in sobriety and how devastating that can be. My heart and prayers go out to his family, because I know it's got to be really, really hard for them, and especially the way it happened. But.
Well, Janine Turner is one who speaks from experience, and in her case, a positive one. And her latest work is A Little Bit Vulnerable. And before we leave, yesterday, after the news about Robin Williams was around for a while, we heard that Lauren Bacall died at 89 years old. What a career she had.
Oh, she did. She did have an amazing career. And I saw her recently at a premiere maybe about 6 or 7 years ago in Hollywood. She was, I mean, it was New York, actually, and she was just going strong. I mean, there she was. She had a real sort of gutsy determination, didn't she? And She had a nice long life.
Yeah, and her husband, Humphrey Bogart, died January 14th, 1957. She outlived him by 57 years.
Can you imagine? I mean, my father died in January, and just to think about all, I believe we're all united in heaven someday, but I think that in the meantime, it was a long time for her to live without him, so I'm sure she's happy right now. Mm-hmm. She's with Humphrey Bogart.
But he died from smoking, and she smoked, I think, until a very late age and lived to be 89. But most people who have these kinds of addictions, and that is an addiction, they don't last mm-hmm. as long as Lauren Bacall. But she was sensational right to the very end. Lived in the Dakota mm-hmm. where John Lennon was killed, where Rex Reed mm-hmm. lives. Thank you, Janine Turner. Congratulations on your continued success, and thanks for sharing your story. The book is a little bit vulnerable from this fine actress. Good to talk with you.
Nice speaking with you. Thank you.
Take care. And we shall return tomorrow. One of the guests is slated to be the fabulous singer, Don McLean. Until then, for Frank Barnett, I'm Jim Inkster. Stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Inkster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Inkster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.